Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
I don't want to lose my place for later. Okay, we are lucky enough to have here over 106 years of Al-Anon membership and experience. Truly awesome. So we're going to start with Joan, with 31 years of service in Al-Anon.
Hi, everybody. My name is Joan, and I'm a grateful recovering member of Al-Anon. When you count all the years up, it reminds me of when I had my 25th birthday many, many years ago, and my husband woke me up and said, "Happy birthday. How does it feel to be a quarter of a century?" Somehow or other, 25 didn't sound old, but a quarter of a century sounds ridiculous. And then when I got to be 30, I had a bad cold, and my birthday's the end of June, and so I usually have a cold in the summertime. And and he said, "Well, when you get used to the idea that you've gone over the hill, you'll be fine." And he was 2 years older than me. So everybody said, "What are you going to do when he gets to be 35? And I said, "I don't dare do anything because he's got 2 years to think of something." My first meeting was in December 4th, 1982. I came to Al-Anon because the man I'd been dating for 6 months couldn't stop drinking. He had told me he was an alcoholic. He told me it was a hot summer's night, and I had just put a gin and tonic in front of him because we always had a drink when we went out to eat or ate at my house. And he said, I asked him why we couldn't have a Saturday night date together. And he said, "Oh, well, I haven't wanted to tell you this, but," he said, "I'm an AA, and that's my home group on Saturday night." And so I said to him, "What are you doing with a drink in front of you?" And he said, "Oh, I can handle it." That's when the red flag should have gone up, and I should have run like crazy. But I didn't. By December that year, he couldn't stop drinking. And so I came to Al-Anon because I wanted to help him stay sober. And I went to my first meeting, and there was a lot of love in that room, and I thought, this is a good place. This is a good place. And there wasn't anybody that was nasty about their alcoholic. They all loved their alcoholic. And that's what I wanted to do. They gave me the ODAT book because I bought it. I think it was either 250 or 450. I don't remember. But it was that long ago. They told me it had a lot of the answers in there for me. This was going to really do it because I was so full of questions. And it was a Saturday night, and I couldn't wait for a whole year to get all these answers that I wanted. So I went home, and I read it cover to cover. I don't think I absorbed it all, but I sure read it, every word of it. John went into rehab in the spring, and I started to go up to Brecksville at the VA hospital, the Al-Anon meeting up there. That's my home group still. He had rehab and then 2 more years of aftercare. Brecksville alcohol rehab was a wonderful program. when he came out of rehab, he asked me to marry him. We got engaged in June, and Thanksgiving we got married. I was in Al-Anon for a couple of weeks, less than a year. I kept going to Al-Anon, but I wasn't working the steps because, you see, they didn't belong to me. I couldn't see it. I wasn't powerless over alcohol. I could drink or not drink if I felt like it. And I didn't drink because I didn't want him to smell it on my breath. I didn't think that was right. But I realized it began to change. My health went downhill, and I was irritable. I was not the nice person that I had been. And my sense of humor was down the tube. And my kids began to see it. And two of them live out of town. One lives in Arizona and the other lives in California. But they could even hear it over the phone. And they ganged up on me. One lives here in Akron. And two girls and a boy. And they ganged up on me and they said, "Mom, you're not the mom we grew up with. You're negative. You're irritable. You lost your sense of humor." And I said, "Yeah, I felt it. But I didn't think anybody else would notice." And they loved me enough to tell me. It was like a mini intervention. So I said, I am an Al-Anon. But I said, I'm not working the program. And then I promptly went to the telephone the next day and asked this lady that I've been talking to each meeting to be my sponsor. I guess I should tell you that I was married, that has to be true, when I was married before to a wonderful guy. We had a great marriage for 27 years. But at 49, he was 49 and I was 47, he had developed a heart condition. And I came home from work one day and he had passed away. That was the worst day of my life, I think. But I managed. I had good family and lots of good friends, and I managed to get through it. Plus, I was working, which helped. I could bury myself in my work. And I had, about a month later, I found out that I was going to have my first grandchild, and I had something to look forward to. As I said, I started with my sponsor, and I started the steps, and all of a sudden, the first three steps did apply to me. And when I got to the fourth and fifth step, I found everything was negative, and she said, "When a store takes an inventory, they don't take just the bad stuff, they take the good stuff too. They miss the good stuff. And every time you tell me something bad, you gotta tell me something good." Oh my goodness. I told her something bad, and there I was, stopped. Couldn't think of anything good. So she spoon-fed me. I was a good wife, I was a good mother, and on and on. And she said, "You know you're a good person." "Yeah, sure." So she said, "Look me in the eye and tell me you're a good person." So I said, "I'm a good person," and I put my head down. And she said, "You got to work on that one. Every time you pass in your reflection, you got to say, 'Joan, you're a good person.'" That was tough. And it took me a while. And one day I woke up and I went into the bathroom, which is always my first stop, and I looked in the mirror and I said, "Joan, you're a good person." And it was like, "Who said that?" "Who said that?" I got on the phone and I told Eleanor. I said, "Eleanor, I'm a good person." And she said, "Oh, I've known it a long time ago." But she said, "I'm glad to know you know it now, too. I'm not perfect. I'm still working on me. But I am working in the program. Fortunately, I work well enough, or hard enough, so that my kids feel like they got their old mom back. And that's what I was striving for, to be the person that I had been when they grew up. And we're a very close family. We just had a reunion, and kids and grandkids came in. I have my three kids, and they got married, so I got six kids, and I got six grandchildren. I love every one of them. And it's just been great. Unfortunately, I'd like to tell you that my marriage was good, but it wasn't. John never stopped drinking, and the drinking didn't bother me. But after not quite a year into the marriage, I found out that I wasn't the only woman in his life. And that was unacceptable. It was very hurtful. Very, very hurtful. So I worked harder. And because my marriage vows were important, for better or worse, well, this was worse than I thought it was going to be. In sickness or in health, well, he was sick. For richer, for poorer, yeah, I had money. It was nice. He had his thriving business. He never missed work. And when I'd ask him to spend more time with me, he'd say, well, you got my GD checkbook. What more do you want? Well, I didn't want a checkbook. Oh, it's nice to have money. I'm not knocking it. But some days I wish I did. But it's just, you can't love a checkbook. You can't curl up with a checkbook. You can't talk to a checkbook. And the checkbook sure doesn't talk back to you. So that wasn't enough for me. I tried very hard to make it work. And I kept asking my sponsor, what will I do? And she said, you'll know when you know. And I thought, if she told me that one more time, I was going to scream. But one day I woke up and I thought, I know. I didn't say a word to anybody. I sat on it for a couple of days, purposely, to make sure it was the right decision. And my heart was okay with it. My gut wasn't churning anymore, and I wasn't getting headaches. And I thought, this is okay. This is what I should do. And it's funny enough, my kids never said it, but his kids used to say, well, Joni, why do you let Dad treat you that way? And I even heard them telling him, why do you treat Joni that way? There was no respect. I didn't feel any love. Except the checkbook. I went to a lot of meetings besides Rexall, that was always my home group. And people would say, well, it's a half an hour away and you got a meeting 5 minutes from your door. And I always feel like the road to a friend's house is never very long. And I have good friends up there. And I will continue as long as I can to drive up there. Finally, when I said to him, it was Founders Day weekend, as a matter of fact, ironically, and I said to him, John, I really think we ought to separate, divorce or separate. And he just jumped at the idea. He said, oh, I know the marriage was over a long time ago. I knew you would be the one. You had a stronger program, and you would be the one to declare it. But who do my shirts? I love the way you do my shirts. So I said, I don't do shirts anymore. And he left the end of June, and that was the last time I did shirts. And that was in 1989. I was going to the Falls, to a meeting in the Falls on Wednesday afternoon and Wednesday night. I was going up to Rexall and I had picked up a couple other meetings. And there were people there that I knew very well and liked. And when we split, I was on three different committees that summer. I really threw myself in town. I needed all the help I could get. And it was this gentleman that was it. Turned out that he was at those very same meetings. And one was a meeting for a conference, a local conference. I forget what the other two were, but they were important meetings. And in the fall, he had his own company, he asked me if I would be his temporary bookkeeper. Just to help him out a couple of days a week for a while. till he could get somebody else. Well, 7 years later, I retired from that job. He liked what I was doing, and he never found anybody else. We got to the point where we started an Al-Anon meeting together in Aurora, and that was fun. And we'd go out, we'd have dinner, we'd have dinner at his place. He lived in Streetsboro and was on the way. And we lived it. We'd have dinner at his place and then go to the meeting. And after a year or so, we were having breakfast at his place. And you figured that one out a little slow on the uptake. It got to the point where we were, our clothes were never in the right place. If it was raining, my raincoat was at my house, or it was snowing, it was someplace else. So it was just, and his rent was going up, and they weren't making repairs on the apartment, and he was going to move. And I said to him, "Why don't you just move in with me?" And he said, I had an 11-room house, and so he said, "Oh, I don't know." He said, "Are you thinking that we'll get married someday?" And I said, "No, no." That ring got on my finger, and the rules changed. I will never get married again. I said, "No, no, no." He had gone through a divorce just as I did around the same time. And he said, "Well, that's good." So I said, "Try it for a month. If you don't like it, move out. But let's promise each other we'll still be good friends." So after about 3 weeks, he came into the kitchen one night. Of course, we saw each other every day, working together. And things were going well at work, and things were going well at the house. And if something went wrong, I'd just say the serenity prayer, and he'd give me a hug and a kiss, and that was it. and we just didn't find fault with each other. We were happy together. So he came to me after about 3 weeks, and he said, "I have a confession to make." And I thought, "Oh, God." And he said, I like it here, and I really haven't looked for any place else to live." So I said, "Well, let's try it for another month." Or maybe it was 6 months at that point. Well, 6 months got to be a year, and a year got to be 5 years. And after 5 years, we said, "You know, this is a little silly." Our kids loved, my kids loved him. My grandkids called him Grandpa. He was there for them, and he was there for me. And his daughter still sends me Mother's Day gifts. And I just don't know what I'd do if I didn't have him. Now, a lot of women have never had a good husband, good mate, and I've been lucky to have two. Because everybody considered that we were married. And in a lot of senses, we were. Except that piece of paper and that ring on my finger, which will never happen. Jim had some health issues. And I was there for him. I was able to work the Al-Anon program through those health issues. He had some mini strokes, and he lost continence. And I'd say the serenity prayer. If I didn't have the serenity prayer, I don't know what I would have done. I really, really enjoyed that prayer and used it and needed it. And Jim was there for me, too. I had a couple of hip surgeries and a bladder surgery, and he was there for me every day. So we complimented each other. We did a lot of things together. We traveled together. We went on an AA cruise, an Al-Anon cruise together. And we were on that one. Yeah. And we just had fun together. And I think I told you we started an Al-Anon group up in Aurora. And that worked out too. And we did a lot of things together. And we went to meetings together and gave leads together. And so, both in Al-Anon. And we had fun. And in October, at the end of October 2012. I'm not that old. he fell and did irreparable damage to his head and his face, and never recovered. 3 weeks later to the day, he passed. When I would want to go up to my Al-Anon meetings on Wednesday night, Jim did a lot of carving. He did wood carving. This is one of his handy pieces, handiworks. He was a master carver, perfectionist, and his friends would come and help just play with him and carve with him. And wood chips on the carpeting didn't mean a thing. They could be cleaned up. And if it wasn't wood carvers, it was somebody playing chess with him. But I was always able to get to my Al-Anon meetings on Wednesday night. And if you try to catch me between 6 and 9, you're not going to, because Wednesday night's my night. And my grandson called me the other night, and he said, "I forgot, Grandma. How could I forget after all these years?" He's 31 now. But I never stopped going to Al-Anon. Never stopped trying to improve myself. I sponsor a couple people, and I'm doing pretty well. It's been very hard. It's harder this time losing Jim than it was when I lost Dick. Because I was working then. I had an outlet. Now I don't. So I had to make my own funds. And for the first year, I wasn't doing too well. But my Al-Anon and my church friends, my other friends rallied around, and I'm okay. I'm okay. I have my days, but, you know, who doesn't? But if it wasn't for Al-Anon, I don't know what I'd do. As I said, my kids still love me. They always did, but now they got their old mom back, and it's okay. What else I got here? It seems like, it doesn't seem like 30, 31 years ago that I started with Al-Anon. It just seems like a much shorter time. But time flies when you're having fun. Turned out John died too in 2012, died in February. And his granddaughter called, one of his granddaughters called me. And I felt sad. I felt sad. Because you see, he had, what the family was calling Alzheimer's. He had fried his brain. He no longer knew who he was or who anybody else was. And it was tough. Tough for the family. And I felt bad. But I didn't feel so bad that I wanted to be with him. I was glad to be where I am. So I thank you for listening. And have a good weekend.
Okay, so we may go over, but we're Al-Anons and we're going to go with it as best we can. Our next speaker is Karen with 36 years of program. Please welcome Karen. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Karen, and I am a grateful member of the Chagrin Valley Wednesday night Al-Anon family group. It seems very, very strange to stand up here. You know, time flies. And it seems very strange to stand up here because, you know, I came into Al-Anon tricked into it, and I wasn't staying. I did grow up in an alcoholic home. And I moved away when I was 17 to get out of that situation. And in 1978, I was planning on marrying a gentleman who was in recovery, and I thought I had found the answer to this situation. At that point in time, my dad had finally gotten sober. My mom had been in Al-Anon for longer than he'd been sober. And I thought, you know, I'm going to beat this disease and I'm going to do it right. I got pregnant. I got married. Okay, I've messed that one up. but that spring or late winter when I was engaged, I'd been up there a while, and I had disconnected completely from the family. I say disconnected, not detached. And my mother and I were talking a little bit, and she invited me to come back to Ohio. I was living in Traverse City, Michigan, and spend a weekend at Punderson Park. And I thought, wow, you know, here my mom wants to reunite with me. And I thought, you know, this would be really cool. And I made plans for my soon-to-be stepson to stay with his grandma and come back to spend a weekend with my mom, you know. And I got in her car in Pepper Pike, and she started driving through Chagrin Valley, and she started picking up all these old ladies. At least at the time, I thought they were old. They were younger than I am now, but you know, perception. And I'm like, okay, something's wrong here. I know I'm in store for something completely different than what I have expected. You know, I was thinking walks through the woods and nice dinners, and that's what I was thinking. And I know I'm in trouble now, and I'm biting my tongue, and I'm trying to be nice because I hadn't been so nice just prior to leaving town. And she picks up, I think it was three other women, and we get out to Punderson Park, and I find out that I am now at an Al-Anon conference. And she had suggested maybe I check out some of those meetings before I marry this man, and I didn't think I needed it. And I will tell you, I was very resentful, I was very angry, I was very PO'd, and I thought about ways to get that, you know, 20 miles back to my car, and, you guys were wonderful to me, even though I sat in the corner all upset and ornery, and women kept coming up to me and trying to talk to me, and, you know, I was just upset, and I was angry, and I was in the handicapped old lady's room, sharing a room with, you know, sleeping on a cot, and I thought, you know, I don't deserve this. And by Sunday morning, I will tell you that I had fallen in love with Al-Anon. By Sunday morning, I realized why she tricked me into this. By Sunday morning, I had plans to drive back to Traverse City and find out where those Al-Anon meetings were. Now, my plan was that I would go to those Al-Anon meetings just long enough to figure out how I needed to behave to help keep my husband sober and help out the children, or future children. That was my plan. I figured I'd give you guys 6 months to a year, you'd teach me everything, I'd be gone. Needless to say, since I'm up here, that didn't happen. I will tell you that during that marriage that lasted a year, we got married. I said I do. He decided he no longer needed to be sober. I became very thankful that I had Al-Anon. Shortly after our 1 year anniversary, the courts granted me permission to adopt his 7 year old son, whose mother was an addict, and, he had basically raised himself while his dad was in the military. And, he decided to leave for Georgia and leave me sole custody papers of my now newborn child and my 7-year-old son. And I was thankful I was in Al-Anon. You know, you women helped me through that. Those things that I didn't know how to do. And at the time, I was managing a foster care home because he had quit his job after we got married. And so I did have a place to live, and I had a job, and I could be with my kids all day long because they were part of the environment. About 2 years later, I decided that trying to deal with all the women in that home and my kids was a little bit too much for me. Both of my sons are what they now call ADHD. You know, back then it was dyslexia and severe hyperactivity. I had gone to John Carroll for teaching special needs children, and I'd done some student teaching in a school for special needs. And so, you know, God had already equipped me for this. They say God doesn't give you any more than you can handle. I will tell you, over the last, I don't know how many years, I've many times said, why do you think I can handle this much? But, you know, he knows what he's doing. It took me a while. I will tell you that during my 20s, I came and went from Al-Anon. I never completely walked away, but there would be periods of time where I would not go to enough meetings. And that helped me learn very quickly that life becomes very dysfunctional when I'm not at meetings, whether there's an alcoholic in my life or not. By the time I was 23, I tried marrying another gentleman that was sober, and that one lasted 2 years, because the second year I didn't go to a lot of meetings, and I beat myself up, and I figured I was the reason he drank. Because why did he start drinking the day we got married? Why did he start drinking the day we got married? Because his sobriety was based on finding a wife. You know, I later found that out, and later during one of his bouts with trying to recover, he even made amends to me and admitted it. Eventually, I had a minister who told me as I went for some counseling that, you know, because I didn't believe in divorce, and I'd already had to have one annulment. And I was really upset about this situation, and our marriage got very domestically violent. And that minister looked at me one day during my counseling sessions while I was crying my eyes out about what had just happened, and he said, you know, God didn't plan on divorces either, but he didn't plan on death do you part means your husband kills you. I highly recommend you start the procedure. And so I gave him the house, and I gave him all the vehicles, and I gave him all the furniture, because it was the only way I could safely escape. And, you know, back in, what was that, 84, there were no women safe. Those things didn't exist. And so it was what was recommended to me. And I thought the world had come to an end. But the reality is he lost everything within 3 months. And by 3 months down the road, I had started to rebuild. You know, I could always already see the blessings of being in the program and being around you guys. 1985, I came back home to visit. I no longer had a resentment towards Mom when she would ask me to visit. You know, I almost hoped she'd take me somewhere Al-Anon. In fact, my current home group was one of the groups she helped start, and she would take me there on a regular basis. They would give me all this wonderful advice out of these new books that were coming out, because when I came in, there were two books, one day at a time, and there was the family, I can't remember the name of it, the family group, something like that. It's now a classic, but I'm bad at names. And as the books would come out, these women would give me advice, and they would make suggestions to me. And I would take it home 500 miles, and I would use it. And when I'd visit again, they'd ask me how it went, and I'd report. It wasn't until 20 years later when I was living in Ohio and my kids were grown up that these women finally admitted to me that they were sending me out like the worm on a fishing pole, to see if it works. You know, but God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself, because if I had known that, I wouldn't have done anything they said, because I thought they were doing it. You know, and as long as I thought they were doing it and it worked, I did it. In 1985, my mother talked me into going to the Cleveland Central office and getting a starter packet for Alateen, because Traverse City did not have any Alateen, and my oldest child was now a teenager, and he was dealing with some serious issues because his father was in Georgia and his addict mother had moved back to the neighborhood. And, you know, there's things I do regret, and one of them was promising him I would never keep his mother out of his life, you know. But I can't take back what I did, and I let her visit, and I knew he needed Alateen. So I let her talk me into it, and I went and got that box, and I went back to Traverse City, and I found a place that was willing to let me have a meeting, and I found some other women in Al-Anon that were willing to help, and I started sponsoring Alateen. I think I forgot to mention I had a daughter in that second marriage, so now I've got 3 kids at that point in time. That was also the first year that I went to what was called OMIAC. Most people know it as COMIAC now. And I started a new section of life for me, because through Alateen, not only were my kids able to work on helping change the next generation, which is something my mother told me early on. She told me she really wanted me involved in Al-Anon because she wanted me to be able to help change the next generation. And I will tell you, there were many nights where I cussed her out for it in the privacy of my own bedroom. But today I am thankful that she told me that, because that stuck in my head. And my kids, all 3 of them, have had the privilege of being seriously involved with Alateen. I won't tell you they've all made the right choices because of it, but I will tell you they've all known where to get help when they didn't make the right choice. I eventually did move back to Ohio in 1988, and so at that point in time, I found groups to be involved with back here. I did not go to that Wednesday night group that I'm now part of, because that was one of my mother's groups, and I felt as though she needed her space to talk. I needed my space to talk. We might visit each other's meeting now and then, but not on a regular basis. My kids were involved in the Sugar Valley Alateen at the time, so I went up to Mentor and I co-sponsored a group. And gave them their space. And at the time, it's what was recommended to me. And I'm glad I did it that way. You know, I've had a lot of health issues over the years, starting with multiple sclerosis and some cancers and things of that sort. But, you know, my Al-Anon people have carried me through every bit of it. Every single bit of it. I think it was 99 or 2000, there was a gentleman who was interested in dating me, and I refused to date him. And then one of our friends sent him over to my house to help work on my daughter's car. Now, all it needed was a battery. I could do it myself, but I think it was a setup. He came over. Well, the same friend who sent him kept telling me we belong together. He was about a year sober at the time, and I knew him from some volunteer work I did for the county, but I'd also known him because I was a horse trainer through his ex-wife. And I knew what he was like before he quit drinking. And you know what? I wouldn't have hung out with that man for a second. In fact, somebody suggested we go out, and I said, there's no way in hell I will ever spend time with that man, unless if there's a miraculous change through God. And I will tell you that one of the county workers suggested he help me with one of the intervention projects, because I would work with the kids and the wives that needed the Al-Anon end of the world. And I needed a male to work with a husband and a couple of sons. And the county worker suggested him because he'd been through their treatment program. And I said I'd give it a try, and we got to be friends. And I will tell you that today we have been married for 11 years. We did live in the same house as roommates for 4 years. He carried me through 3 kinds of cancer, did not run away. I got to watch the miraculous change through God that I said would be the only way I'd hang out with him. I also said I'd never marry him unless he was 5 years sober, so we got married on his 5th anniversary, which makes it real easy for me to remember how long he's been sober plus when our wedding anniversary is. And he had 2 boys and a girl, too, so, you know, we've got quite the family today. And it's really kind of cool because one of my guidelines for that relationship, even before we dated, was I told him God had to come first. Our programs have to come second. And I will tell you, you don't have a hope in the world to come before my children and my animals. I won't tell you he didn't test those boundaries during those early years, but prior to me saying I do, he got the message and he appreciates it today. The first 5 years we were together, if I went to an Al-Anon meeting, he'd say, oh, you're going to see those women. Because he'd been to 4 meetings. His sponsor wanted him to go. You know, we say 4 to 6 meetings. He went to 4. And I will tell you today, I've gone to hear him lead, and now he praises Al-Anon. And that's only because I kept doing what you guys taught me to do. I kept putting 1 foot in front of the other. My children are thankful that the youngest is 32, my youngest stepdaughter is 29. They are all thankful that I have been involved with Al-Anon. But they are always the first ones to mention if mom doesn't make it to a meeting in a couple of weeks. So why do I keep coming back? I don't ever want to turn into the rageful, evil woman that you guys took under your wing and taught me how to be a better person. And today I still sponsor an Al-Anon or Al-Ateen group. I did take 9 months off. And when I was ready, because I had a neck surgery and had to learn to do everything all over again, literally. And when I was ready, or before I was ready, there was a new Chagrin Falls group because it had dissipated. And Kay asked me if I would help out because I had some experience. And I am so thankful she did, because that group now has 45 kids on the roster. We have 2 meetings a week. The kids are bringing their own friends into that meeting. And I will tell you, this inner child has grown more from that group of kids than I ever did any other way. So yes, I am doing it for selfish reasons. Plus, learning to walk again and everything else, the first time I went back to Pomiac, because I did miss 10 years for health reasons, I felt as though the kids shouldn't carry me. I sent other sponsors with them. The first year I went back to Pomiac, when we got home, about 2 weeks later, we went on an outing with the teens to an event, and one of them told me, he said, Karen, you have a stick back to your beads. You know what? I realized he was right. Those kids are what keep me young. Today I have 12 grandchildren and I get to spend time with them, and I can't count the number of blessings in my life other than the fact that I was asked to be here today, and I'm sure my mother's spirit is sitting in one of these seats, because this is exactly what she always wanted to see. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for that. Our last speaker will be Mike, with 39 years of Al-Anon experience.
Hi, I'm Mike, grateful recovery Al-Anon from North Canton, Ohio. Saturday morning, Tuesday evening, most of the audience. Thank you very much. It won't be 39 until September, so I'm really cheating a little bit there. I really feel grateful right now because, and listening to the two young ladies speak, you know, with their, I'm glad I didn't have their tumultuous lives, both health-wise and relationship-wise. I feel kind of boring right now. I don't know that I'm going to have enough to say to really make any difference, but I'll give it a try. I've actually been married once. And that was for 45 years so far. So I guess I have to go home and tell my wife, you know, we need to do something different. But the reason that I keep coming back to Al-Anon, it has changed over the years. And, you know, it's different now than it was when I came in, but there's a myriad of reasons why I keep coming back. So I'd like to kind of touch on them, and of course, they kind of follow a timeline. I first came into Al-Anon in 75. My wife called from a treatment center and said, "You need to go to Al-Anon." And I said, "What is it?" She said, "I don't know. They just told me that family members, you know, if I'm going to get well, you've got to go." And I said, "Okay." You know. At that time, actually, I had filed for divorce. And I think, like you said, I was told by a counselor that I should do that, you know, that there was no way that this woman was ever going to be a normal person, and that he would deny that he told me that because it was unprofessional, but he thought I should do it. And since I paid him $100 for the advice, I thought I'd better take it. But after another treatment center, I had kind of, the good boy that I am, I had kind of said, "I'll take you back since you're really trying hard to recover. But, you know, you got to toe the mark." So I felt when she called and said, "You need to be in Al-Anon," I would do it. I didn't do it to try to cure her or try to get her well or help myself. I did it because it was a supportive thing to do. It was, I felt that if I did that, of course, I'd tell her, "I went to Al-Anon, how do you feel?" And she said, "No different. It's not working." But the meeting I went to was a very dysfunctional meeting. I didn't know that because I didn't know about Al-Anon. However, these old ladies, and again, like you said, they were old at the time. They've gone to their rest by now, I'm certain. But these old ladies had they brought baked goods to the meeting. So the first reason that I came back to Al-Anon was pastry. I have to be honest, that is exactly why I went back. I didn't listen to what they said. Well, or once in a while they would bring up an interesting situation where their husband was chasing him with a gun, and we had to figure out how to get the gun away from him and hide it so that when he came home from work, you know. And that was kind of exciting a little bit, but I didn't really know that you should go to other meetings. You know, no one ever said, you know, try six meetings and make them different meetings. Go to different meetings and see if there's one that resonates, because I didn't want to resonate. I just wanted, to let my wife know I was kind of trying to get the relationship back to where it was the way that it should be. But I did find a group just by happenstance. There was a man that was supposedly leading, and I said, "There's no men in Al-Anon." So I was going to go to this meeting to prove my point. And when I got there, it was a man. The reason I didn't believe it, his name was Pat, and I thought, "There's no man named Pat. You know, it's got to be a woman." But it was a man, and the meeting had a lot of women whose husbands were recovering. They were in program, and they had been to treatment centers, and they were kind of like what I was. I found people that were like me. They had the same story. They had the same life. Things were the same. And that kept me coming back, as well as the fact that I knew that my marriage during that first year of sobriety was in real, real trouble. I thought, if I don't learn how to live with a recovering alcoholic, I'm out of here, she's out of here, we're both, you know, going to pass away or something. But I thought, this is a crisis. And when I went out to that meeting, it was a half an hour drive to Louisville. I mean, I was an avid racquetball player, and there would be a tournament, and I'd be in the semifinals, and I'd say, "I can't play. I got to go to my meeting today." I mean, it was that much of a life and death type of thing, because I knew if I didn't go, my marriage was dead, and I was not going to, you know, feel very good about anything in my life. So the reason I kept coming back at that time was to save my marriage. And these women taught me patience. You know, it took her a long time to get where she is. It's going to take her a while to get better. You got to take it easy. You got to be tolerant. And they told me stories of hope. I never had hope before I came to Al-Anon, before I came to that meeting. I always thought when something happened, it was going to turn out bad. You know, that was just the way life was. And when you had an argument, the marriage was over. When somebody got sick and, you know, went to a treatment center, the marriage was over. And they taught me about hope. They also taught me how to help others. And I think that kept me coming back, because I realized how good it made me feel about myself to be involved in service work. I became, you know, on the beginner's list for the Louisville meeting. And one of the ladies got me involved in Molly Stark Hospital. They had a treatment center out there, and I I wrote the, actually wrote the manual for the family program at Molly Stark Hospital, and we would go out every week and talk to the family members who had people that were at Molly Stark. So that really was the reason I came back, is because it made me feel good, not only the meeting itself, but also what the meeting was teaching me to do in life with other people, especially helping others. About that time, my oldest daughter went to a couple treatment centers for various reasons. Chemical dependency one time, codependency the second time. And fortunately, I was in Al-Anon and really active at that time. And it didn't take as much toll on me as it did on my wife. But I kept coming back because I knew that my life would not, you know, having a wife that was alcoholic and was recovering was different than having a child that was going through some problems. And Al-Anon helped me get through that by coming back. I like the idea of belonging. I've never, when I was in high school, I tried to get into a club and they wouldn't take me in, and I always felt like I was an outsider. And Al-Anon, I came back because Al-Anon gave me a feel of belonging to a group, like-minded people that, you know, cared about me, and I felt like I was in a group that was going to help me in life. About that time, too, we got into a couples group of AA and Al-Anon people, and the way that you got into the group was you had to be in AA or Al-Anon for a year and continuous program. So if I hadn't kept coming back, I would have been drummed out of the couples group. And the couples group actually has kept our marriage alive and saved it many, many times over the 45 years that we've been married. So we continue to do that, and it's been a wonderful thing. There was a time that I went to a meeting that got very dysfunctional. We had some people that were coming to the meeting just because it was, I guess it was a sense of belonging, but they didn't work a program. So it's not just belonging. You have to kind of do what you're supposed to do when you're there. But some of the people there didn't do anything in between the meetings. They just came for a social hour. And there were several people that came with religious agendas. And the meeting went downhill real quickly, and it disappeared. And so for about 6 months, I guess I lied, 39 years minus 6 months, because for 6 months I was out there somewhere, not going to meetings. And I had heard there was a real good meeting on Saturday morning, but I was coaching my kids in soccer and basketball, and I couldn't do that on Saturday morning. But as soon as the kids were able to quit playing, so I kept trying to urge them, "You sure you want to play this game anymore?" And finally they said, "No, we're out of here." And I said, "Thank God, you know," and I'm off to the Saturday morning meeting. And the good news was I went back to the meeting when there was no crisis in my life. But about 2 years after that, my second daughter chose to get involved with chemicals and behavioral problems and go into various treatment centers and therapeutic schools. And again, without the program at that time, I would have been a basket case. There were two women in the Saturday morning meeting. Talk about coming back. If I walked into that meeting and Gail or, who's the other one? Paula. If Gail or Paula weren't at that meeting, I would be crushed because they had daughters that were in, going down in flames, and I had to run to them to find out, you know, what are you doing? You know, how does that work? What did you do? So, for advice, for answers, I couldn't miss that meeting during those years of her active use. Actually, she's still active, but it's moderated a little bit. She's now 25 and still uses, but she had a serious accident from an alcoholic incident, and that has kind of kept her from using too much. I'm not someone that makes friends real easily, but I keep coming back because my best friends are in the couples group and in the Al-Anon meeting. And the nice thing about Saturday morning, we have 60, 70 people. So I have 60, 70 friends on Saturday morning. How cool is that? You know, it's nice for an 8 or 9 people meeting, but when you can go to a meeting and say, "I've got 60 people here who I can call friends, and I can talk intimately with any one of them." So, again, I keep doing that. About 2 years ago, my wife, who had been sober for 35 years, relapsed. And the greatest thing, you know, you always wonder, how does this program really work when there's a crisis. And I couldn't believe how calm I was. What I did was I called a friend of hers who is in AA with her, not a sponsor, but her best friend. And I just said, "Ann, Sally's in trouble." And I walked away, went to work, never thought about it at work, never thought about it again. And Ann took care of it. And she went to a treatment program again and has been doing, you know, fine ever since. I kind of come to Al-Anon to fill my tank. You know, I need so much serenity, peace of mind, solitude, just answers, camaraderie. I need things, you know, you're like an empty gas tank, and when you go to a meeting, you kind of get filled up. In fact, when I was at a family program for about the seventh or eighth time, they said, "I want all you people to go home and go to 2 Al-Anon meetings a week." And I thought, I can do that. I've always gone to one. I thought, you know, well, why haven't I done that before? So now I go to 2 meetings a week and get to fill my tank, you know, twice a week. And it really, really works. And I love both of them, and they're both different, but we have some of the same people in it. Currently, I'm getting an unconscious coupling from my business partner. So I'm going through that right now, which is, it's been pretty good. He's also a recovering alcoholic, so, by the way. So as you can see, my life has been, I didn't mention my dad was alcoholic, but my life has been touched in many, many ways and many, many times by alcoholics. And of course, it's also been touched by people that have other illnesses, mental, physical. Stuff happens. I won't say the real word. But as long as stuff happens, and you know it's going to, you need Al-Anon. You need to keep coming back. Because that's where you get the friendship, you get the camaraderie, you get people who listen to you, and people who can support you in whatever you're going through. And so I don't plan. I know stuff is coming. And I don't plan on ever leaving. And I hope that I can come here in 10 years and say that I'm on my 49th year. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.